Welcome to the Voice of the Winged Ox, the official podcast of St. Luke's Episcopal Church in Jamestown, New York. I'm your host, Rev Merrill, bringing you This I Believe. In today's world, many of the conflicts we see are shaped, at least in part, by religion. Differences between religions, and even within religions, cause a variety of problems at home and abroad. Here at St. Luke's, we are exploring our own core beliefs as Christians and Episcopalians. Listen in as we ask ourselves how our beliefs shape our values and our actions. In this podcast, we will hear from a variety of people about the intersection of their faith and life.
Sharing faith is very interesting because probably the majority of people find it very difficult to do, and I'm not sure why that's true. If my wife asked me yesterday, which she did, "Are you nervous about today?" I would have said, nah. Well, in my dream last night, I dreamt that we had a lot of people, and then I couldn't get it together. When I was coming into church, some drive-by guy squirted ketchup on me, and I had it all over my arm, so I looked like I'd been hit by a car. And then I couldn't find my notes, and I woke up, and I was sweating. So am I nervous? Yes. I think this is very hard to do. I don't know why it's so hard to share faith, but it is. It's so personal. And I've had some people tell me, I just can't say anything about my faith. I understand. I think this is hard. Years ago, there was an old joke that was told that we thought was really funny and we really enjoyed, about two cannibals who were comparing notes after a meal of missionaries. And the one cannibal said, "Ah, they're getting more and more tender. They're better than ever." And the other missionary said, or the other cannibal said, "Boy, the one I had was terrible. Woody, flavorless, chewy. I've never had anything so poor." And the cannibal number one said, "Didn't you read the warning labels? That one had had an accident and had a wooden leg." We thought that was really funny. Now, putting this in perspective, I'm going to start with a target of what my life is all about, and that's trying to be God's ambassador as imperfectly and best as I can here, because I think it's very important how we look to others. I don't want to be the missionary with the chewy leg. I want to be as good an ambassador as I possibly can. And I think this is my starting point, and it also will come full circle to the end of what I have to say, because I think that's one of the most important things. Some of you may remember, if you were into contemporary Christian music at all, a group called Whiteheart that had a song that was a number one hit in the 1980s about, "We are His hands, we are His people, children of the light." And I think that's really true. I think that's one of the things we have to consider, is how do we look to other people? My transition to getting here has been probably a lot more convoluted than most of you would realize, and probably more than most people. I was raised in a very strict, legalistic, fundamental upbringing. I wasn't allowed to dance. There was no alcohol. There was no tobacco. I wasn't allowed to play cards. I wasn't allowed to do this. I wasn't allowed to do that. In my family, which was four, my brother and myself and two parents, three of them pretty much took it at face value. This is the faith that our parents and grandparents handed it to us. This is what they believe. This is what I believe. And then there's me. I questioned everything all the way through. And I would say, this doesn't make sense. Well, you weren't given a satisfactory answer. You'd be given, well, that's the way we've always done it. It's not only the Episcopal Church. And that's the way we believe. For instance, I challenged dancing. I couldn't see what was wrong with dancing. In fact, I even, when they had dancing classes in school, tried to sneak in and learn how to dance because I thought it would be a lot of fun. I mean, to me, this was not an issue. This wasn't a spiritual issue. But to my parents and my brother, it was. We had a member of our church who was a science teacher there peek through and saw me trying to learn how to dance and reported to my parents. And I was summarily yanked out of the dancing class because this was wrong. What it told me was religious faith is nothing but rules, a lot of which don't make sense. Thou shalt not. And that's all I saw of it. And it turned me off completely. So by the time I got out of high school, I couldn't wait to get away from home. I couldn't wait to get away from the church because there was no reasoning involved. You would say, you know, what's wrong with dancing? Just as an example, I can roller skate with somebody. I can ice skate with somebody arm in arm, and that's okay. But to dance is not. This turned me off. So when I got away to college, I went into a really very difficult period in which I was very rebellious. I went back and took a sabbatical in college when I was 41 years old. And I came down the hall in Fredonia. One of my professors from 20 years before came out in the hall and saw me. And he says, Dan Anderson, what are you doing here? And I says, I'm back as a student. And he said, after 21 years or 20 years, he says, are you still like you were? Because he said, you are probably the wildest student that I can remember being here. The professors were afraid of you. You didn't know what you were going to do. So the rebellion was violent because I've been kept so down and nothing I tried to reason or question ever would be explained. It's just like, we don't do that. And you're not going to do that as long as your feet are under this table. I don't know how many times I heard that. So I rebelled big time, like a lot of people in that particular age. Through all these exploring years, I went through the whole cycle of fast boats, which I dearly loved, fast cars, which I loved even more, and pretty much if there was something out there that I was able to do, I would try it. Like a lot of people in this age. And it didn't go away right away. It held well into my 30s. Now, what happened through a series of events that little by little kind of took their toll on me is I achieved a lot of the things I wanted to do. I had the job I wanted. I had the car I wanted for this year. I would plan on another one the next year to give me that other high. But I was going from one buzz after another on buying different things. I published a book in high school biology for laboratory, and that was accepted by a publisher and published. So ostensibly I had everything. I had always wanted a house on a lake. I had my house on the lake. So I lived a life that I thought was my perfect life. But I would wake up in the middle of the night in what I call the black hole of the middle of the night. And I would think. And I would agonize because there was something there that wasn't right. Something was missing. I was very aware that whatever I did, it didn't hold together. It didn't last very long. As far as the satisfaction and the high, it would, you know, I'd buy a car and I'd be thrilled to pieces and I'd be just, you know, wild about it. And after you'd had it 2 or 3 months, it was back to the same. That, you know, it didn't fill the void. And I'd sit there at night, or late at night, and I'd lay awake and I'd think, this doesn't make sense. What's missing? I've done the things people said would make the difference. I've done a lot of things that for my goals, I'd achieved them. And it still wasn't working. And I would think, well, I could shop for a new car, and I was already aware, it's not going to do it. You'll make me happy for a month, and then I'll be right back to the same old person. And at this point, I'd calmed down quite a bit. I certainly wasn't a bad person. And my teaching career was going well. I was looking at maybe going back for a PhD. I had a lot of things that I was working towards and goals, but there still was some kind of void there that I couldn't explain. And I had things happen to me that shook my self-reliance. One time, when I was a young teacher, we had three of us that rented a house together. And one of the roommates was gone, and one of the roommates was there. And we were going to have supper. And I can remember, I didn't have anything. We ate a lot of TV dinners because they were quick and easy. And I didn't have one. And I was going to ask him about getting a TV dinner. I said, can I borrow a TV dinner? I'm going to go into town, and I'll buy a replacement or a couple replacements. Can I do that? Thinking that would be an automatic. No. You can buy your own TV dinners. This had been going on over a period of a couple of months, and we talked to among the other roommate, and I talked to him, and I said, what's going on with Mike? He's very contentious. His whole personality is changing. Well, I finally rustled up whatever I could get for supper. We sat down for supper, and I looked at him, and he had this wild expression on his face that just transfixed me. I just looked at him. I couldn't believe the look on his face. He kicked right up over, kicked the table over, landed on the floor, was in full seizure, and I knew he wasn't an epileptic, was spearing himself with his fork, and it was a horror show. An absolute horror show. I didn't know what to do. I have to say, I didn't know first aid. The thought of running out was ever in my mind, but I thought, I can't leave him here. So I got the fork out of his hand. He was turning blue because his tongue had folded back in his mouth. I propped, by some grace of God, I knew enough to tip his head back, and I could hear the air go in. And then I rolled him over on his stomach, and now he was quiet. So I called my girlfriend at the time, who was a nurse. It wasn't Shauna. This was a long time ago, before
a second rate.
Before a tomato comes flying at me. And she said, oh, that's epilepsy. He'll be fine and he'll be subdued when he comes to. Well, he came to and he was not subdued. And I said, he's coming after me. She said, oh, that's not epilepsy then. I said, get an ambulance out here. Get me some help. He tossed me out of the way like I was a cork. I mean, just flick. And he went out and he staggered around. He ran down the main street. We lived out in the country. Staggered down the road. I didn't know what to do. But he seemed to respond like a child. So I said, Mike, it's your birthday. And that stopped him. And he said, birthday? And he just stopped dead. He was like a maybe 3 or 4 year old. And I said, yeah, they're having a party back in the house. Don't you? You don't want to miss your birthday party. No, no. So he turned around, and we got him back. And as we got him back, the ambulance came, took him. They got him to Brooks Hospital because I was a teacher at Dunkirk. And he had a seizure, a grand mal seizure, that 5 people couldn't hold him down. He had a brain tumor the size of a cigarette pack, which they had to operate in emergency that night. That took the legs out from my confidence and my arrogance, because I realized how vulnerable we all are. Here's 24 years old. This doesn't happen. By the grace of God, it was benign, and he recovered. But I didn't. I had nightmares for I can't tell you how long. I'd wake up in the night and I'd just sit upright. But I think in balance it was part of a plan, because it was steering me towards even more looking at what was missing in my life and saying, I've got it together. I've got everything I need. I don't need faith. Because this showed me a different side. What I came out with was, someday, it may not be like with Mike, but someday I'm going to have to face up to this. What am I going to do about God? Am I going to be a believer or am I not? I can keep putting it off, but someday there's going to be some kind of a decision made here in this whole thing. January 1st, 1977. My parents called and said, would you like to go over to Aunt Elsie's for New Year's Eve? Please, would you go with us? Okay, I'll go. So I went over to Aunt Elsie's, who was as, you know, religiously zealous as they were. We ate dinner. It was fine. It was good. Sat down, and everybody said, let's watch Billy Graham. Oh! Billy Graham. I suggested, why don't we watch Lawrence Welk? And if you know how much I hated Lawrence Welk, this puts it in perspective. I would have done anything rather than listen to Billy Graham. But it was a turning point in my life, because I had no choice. And I had the background of a lot of things that really shook me as far as my invincibility. I mean, men when they're 24 years old are invincible. It's not going to happen to me. I've got many, many years. The thing with my roommate Mike showed me that wasn't true, that it can happen at any time. It can happen abruptly and out of nowhere. Who knows what the future is going to hold. I had no choice but to listen to Billy Graham. I had to listen to him. I was at my aunt's, and here we were. And what was I going to do? So Billy Graham came on. He couldn't have hit me any more between the eyes with a message than he did. Because what he said, my message for 1977 is, you who think you have everything, you who sit there and you've achieved all you want, you have the money, you have the job, you have the house, you have the car, you have everything. And it's like I sat there like, wow, could you be talking more to me where my life is right now? And he said, it's empty, isn't it? You go from one high to the next, but nothing satisfies for any length at all. And I remember saying to under my breath, boy, is that ever true? You couldn't say it any better than that. And he says, you know what you're missing? I know you're not going to believe this, but what you're missing is faith in your life. I didn't know what to think about it, but it shook me up a great deal. After I didn't say anything, and after we went home, or I went home, I was living by myself, it was one of these crystal clear nights when it's zero, and you look up and you can see the Milky Way, and you can see every single star, and I looked up, and I didn't know. I always had this questioning mind, and I looked up and I said, I can't believe this can really be the answer. Can it really be the answer? Now, did I jump into it and was everything wonderful ever after? No. But I opened the door enough to actually pray, which is not something was going to happen. And I said something like, I didn't do a sinner's prayer. I just looked up and I said, I don't know what to think about this, but something is desperately missing in my life. And if you would come in and show me if you're real, I will believe. Ever wanting the empirical test, I knew enough about the Bible to say that when you come to faith, you will become a new creature in Christ. I had so many doubts about this whole thing, I said, I'm going to run a test on it. And I know you're not supposed to, thou shalt not test your, you know, your Lord. But I said, the test is really of me, because I'm not going to say anything to anybody and see if there's any change. Does anybody notice anything? So I never said a word. And over the next month, people in school, people all around me said, you're different. I don't know what it is. You got a glow about you. You're much happier. You're much more together. You're much nicer. There's something really changed. Something's different. And then I knew. Then I knew it was for real. Now, would I ever say that people have to pray a sinner's prayer and you have to have an exact moment when you accept faith in your life? Oh, no, not in any way. I think everybody comes in their own way. I think some people have a defining moment, like I did when I was, you know, forced to watch Billy Graham. But boy, you know, what a message and what timing. It was perfect. Some people, it comes a little bit at a time. I think everybody goes into it with their own particular pattern. I did say then to different people that I had come to faith. I became active in a church, and I went into what I call the Nazarite years, because that's what I'd always heard. Legalism, rule-keeping, was very comfortable because I was brought up with it, and I thought that's what faith was all about. So I went right back into that pattern. And I couldn't have lived a cleaner life if I'd had to. Not that that's a bad thing to do, but along with that, I was also very, very critical of everybody else. I got very judgmental, which is the danger of that kind of pattern of thinking. So this went on for a while. And what I found was there was three of us in the church, and we would get together and we would beat up on everybody, because this one wasn't doing this right, this one wasn't reading their Bible enough, this one wasn't reading this or doing that. Eric is going to probably not like what I have to say. What I found out was I didn't become a new creature in Christ. Remodeled? Maybe. The old person was still there. It was changed. It was different, but it wasn't gone. I was still the same basic person, and I still was questioning. I couldn't put that away. That was still there, and I started more and more to have conflict with these two people, because they would make statements, and I would say, that doesn't make sense. Like the one sent me a little book, and it was on the end times and who the Antichrist was. And when I got it all to the end, it opened, and the last page he revealed the Antichrist was not a person, but it was a Catholic church. I didn't know what to do with that. It was like, that doesn't make sense. And his friend called and said, what did you think about that? I said, I know a lot of fine Christian people that are Catholic. Well, if they're Catholic, if they haven't accepted Christ, they're not going to heaven. And if you're born in India, you're not going to heaven. So we got all of these rules. I don't know who's going to heaven and who isn't. You know what? It isn't my responsibility. That's up to the person and God. And that's all I can say about that. You can read very conflicting things in the Bible. Narrow is the way, and few there be that find it. So we took off on that one, and we were, you know, we just happened to be the few, and everybody else wasn't going to make it. Well, that didn't make sense to me. How do I know I'm right? A little church in Jamestown, and the only divine beam goes right to that particular church? This doesn't make sense. But to the other people, it did. So I would find myself in more and more debate with it. And I said to the other person, what if you were born in India? Well, then I would go to hell. I don't know. I don't have answers to these, and I'm here to very much say that. I can't say for sure what happens in cases like that. I don't know. But I can't be that judgmental. A lot of the things didn't make sense. So over time, over a few years, I pulled out of that and I said, this doesn't make sense. So the old remodeled Christian, the basic questioning was still there. We had a chairman of the church. This was a coup de grace. This is the one that did it. And he was observed out with his wife having a glass of wine. And my two buddies called and said, do you know that Bob was seen drinking wine? And he's the chairman of the church. And you will know what it says, I think it's in Timothy, that a leader of the church cannot be given to wine. You know what that means. He can't be drinking wine. And they wanted to go after him and get him to resign his position over this. That's how fervently some of these things are ingrained. And I said, this doesn't make sense. For one thing, I read back in Timothy and read what it really says, and it says, not given to too much wine. That's a very different, very different meaning. Here was a guy that when my car broke down, loaned me his car for 2 weeks. I mean, he couldn't have been a better friend. So what are we going to do? I mean, he's showing to me what a Christian life should be, to help others, to be concerned about others. And he absolutely was to everybody around him. So we're going to spear him because he has a glass of wine and ruin the whole relationship in the church? I can't do this. This doesn't make sense. So there was quite a dividing off of that particular part of my life because with the questioning, it wouldn't stand up to it. For me, for the other people, it was fine. But for me, it didn't work. I looked at my life and I said, coming back to the missionary with the wooden leg, you know, do I represent a caring Christian person to other people? Are people looking at me and saying, what does he have that I don't have? If you're critical and condemning and self-righteous, that's not going to help other people looking at you very much. That's going to turn them off. And I said, it would turn me off. This doesn't make sense. I read one time where, some of you may have heard this, I really like this, where in a school, in a seminary, they assigned a couple students in a team to take a Bible and cut out whatever they could find on certain topics. So a couple students were assigned to cut out everything in the Bible that was on keeping the Sabbath holy. Cut it out. Take it right out of the Bible. And then in like a couple weeks, they had to come back. Neat project. Somebody else was going to cut out what it had to say about homosexuals. Somebody was going to cut out what it had to say about, you know, different topics, use of alcohol, different things. Somebody else was assigned, a team was to cut out everything itself says about being kind to your neighbor, loving the person around you. You can see this one coming. They came back in a couple of weeks, and the person whose Bible was about caring for the people around you, the Bible wouldn't even stay together. It fell apart because so much was in there. Does that tell you where the emphasis is? Are these other things in there? Yes. But what I was doing was I was putting those in the priority. that was the thing that really mattered. Where the thing I should be doing that the Bible's giving the most emphasis to, I wasn't even looking at. So this represented a real change, and I certainly don't fault the church for it. But it represented a real change in my life because I said, this pattern doesn't work for me. Now, there's a subtle danger in this too. And that's to sort of reverse discriminate. I like very much the idea of the little three-legged stool, which has tradition, scripture, and reasoning. That works for me very well. Because what I found out in my life, if you saw off the reason leg, I can't balance on it. Because you've got a two-legged stool. And for me, that doesn't work. I can't understand why that would work for anybody. But you know what? I can't come back and say, I use reason, therefore I am better than the rest of you. There's a lot of very fervent, wonderful Christians who can't deal with the ambiguity of the reasoning. It bothers them too much. And it's not up to me to criticize them or put them down. They're also God's children. They're different. They have a different way of looking at it than I do. So I have to be very careful because that would be easy to do. That would be easy for me to start, you know, criticizing, and I don't want to do that. So, after all of this, what's happened? Well, I know less and less about faith as far as being dogmatic. I backed off on so many issues, and Shauna would be the first one to tell you that. In the time that she's known me, I've softened and mellowed a lot. Is my faith mellowing? Oh, no, not at all. But now I'm trying more and more to spend my energy in being a good ambassador for Christ, and very imperfectly, but as best I can, rather than spending all my energy in judging everybody else, because I don't want to be judged like that. There'd be a lot of things you could say. There's a lot of failure. I love the idea of the three-legged footstool. That fits me very well. And I'm, as best I can, not telling anybody else what they should do, because that's up to them. That's their life. They have to fit their faith with what works for them. And it's not up to me to tell them what that would be. Has everything worked perfectly? No. As I said, I'm remodeled. Did God take away the desire to have a new car every 2 years? No, Shauna did that. She came in and chop. And that was something that needed to be done. I would give her all credit for that. She's been wonderful for me because she's reined in some of these habits that I've had that, you know, certainly got less when I came to faith, but they didn't go away. Some of those same things. I'm still a lot of the same person. The same basic genetics is there. I'll leave you with one story, and then I'll answer any questions anybody has. 2 years ago, we went to a wedding of one of Brad's friends, and it was in one of the local, considered to be very fundamental churches. And it was a beautiful wedding. Waiting in line after the wedding, we got talking to the person in front of us. And we had a wonderful discussion. We were talking about the wedding and the different things they did that showed their faith. And he says, after quite a long time, well, I'm a Baptist minister. That's wonderful. And what church do you go to? We belong to the Episcopal Church in Jamestown. You should have seen his face. He looked at us like, he says, oh, you don't know anything I'm talking about. And turned around and walked away from us and left us sitting there, standing there. You know how much it hurts when you get judged like that? I can't tell him what he needs to do, but all I can do is say for me, I've got to make sure that I don't do that to other people because that really hurt. But we didn't do any, you know, coming back at him or anything like that. What are you going to do? But we need to be very careful. So, That's faith to me. That's how I got here. Probably more than you wanted to know, but it's kind of an interesting, convoluted pattern, which I think God was directing it many times as to what happened. I can see that very clearly now as I look back. Thank you.
You can visit us online at thewingedox.blogspot.com, where you can find more information, show notes, and links to resources mentioned in these podcasts. You can also call our comment line at 206-203-3904 or send us email at thewingedox@gmail.com. Our music is The First Sunday by Jeff Wall, available at magnatune.com. For the voice of the Winged Ox, I'm your host, Rev Merrill. May God bless your week.